Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. Have we got a treat in store for you.
Good morning, good morning. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, here at the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby, CJSF.ca, streaming worldwide. Welcome to a special Friday episode of SLUAL, Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon, where we will hear ways that some Vancouver area seniors are acting upon two important issues, healing the digital divide and igniting activism around the old growth trees. Hearing that conversation before we get overwhelmed with upcoming election era rhetoric. Via the power of broadcasting, you're being teleported to Powered by Age's 71st Zoomcast, where Marion Pollock, board chair of the 411 Senior Center and environmental activist Susan Gage, share some thoughts that you too can act upon now. You'll also hear another example of how CJSF brings you voices of local independent artists through a short sci-fi story written by Neil Ryan. It's called The Alien, and he and Leslie Hubert will be bringing that to you. Hello and welcome to Powered by Age. This is Thursday, September 9th. I'm Charlotte Sister C. Farrell, the podcast host. Today, you're invited to discuss why, what, when regarding senior issues. We have special guest presentations and a creative writing activity by three of our regular podcast members. I'd like to respectfully acknowledge that our work takes place on the traditional unceded homeland of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations. And we advocate and do things that are in line with having that land reconciled with the Indigenous people at some point. What we do at the beginning is have people just give a brief introduction of themselves. And today, rather than where you're from, I'm going to ask you, what is an issue? What's the most pertinent senior issue to you? And then Marion and Susan will introduce last, and they will begin with our discussion. So, Leslie?
Yes, I'm Leslie Hebert from New Westminster, and I think one of the most pressing senior issues is affordable housing.
Okay. Neil?
Yes, my name is Neil Ryan, I guess for me, the most important issue is the cost of dentistry and whether they could subsidize it or, in fact, I think at one point in time in British Columbia, dental was included and then they cut it out because it was too expensive.
And I remember that you have a question that we'll ask Miriam. Somebody on one of our podcasts said 411 had a link to some dentist who only charged $40.
So no, I wanted to just 40%.
40%. Okay. 40%. Okay. So we'll track that down. Nancy?
Oh, I think accessibility is always an issue, regardless of whether you're a senior or not.
And your name is?
Oh, I'm sorry, Nancy Sinclair.
Prafula?
I'm really concerned about retirement homes for seniors and the availability of it, but not so much that as the way the pricing of retirement homes is, it's way beyond some of our, budget. We cannot afford $6,000 a month living in a retirement home, and which leads me into nursing homes, the scarcity of nursing homes, as well as the way nursing homes are, supervised.
Those are very important issues. Thank you. Delsa? Oh, you have to unmute.
Mute. Okay.
No, unmute.
Unmute, Delts. Can she see me?
Unmute. How do you do unmute?
But we can't hear you because you're muted.
You have to use sign language.
just put the mouse over where the microphone is, where it says mute, and click.
I think she was.
Oh, yeah. Is it okay?
There.
Now we can hear you.
Perfect. Something came on the middle of the screen. I just stopped it. Like Leslie was saying, affordable housing starting today. Here in Mississauga, there's, let me just give some statistics. 200 seniors waiting for a bed every day. And it takes 2 years to get in. And I have a lot of friends who live alone, and they shouldn't be living alone. And, you know, and it's not good. It's not good. In like 20 some years, there'll be 20% more senior because the lifespan of people are getting longer, and this government can seem to keep up with the demand for housing. You know, my fervent wish is like build a big government complex, 100% subsidized, around our area when there's a lot of land, like around Peterborough, Bronte Park, and there should be like standard rate, for example, I don't know, $500 a month, and if they know that we live alone, we go there. It's crazy to know people like me personally, my friends are living alone and they shouldn't be living alone.
Okay, thank you. That's an important point. Dr. Ramona, can you unmute?
Sure.
Oh, what we're doing, people, you introduce yourself and one thing that you think is a pertinent issue for seniors.
Okay, so I'm Dr. Ramona. I'm a newcomer to Canada, a retired professor, Bombay University, a writer of a few academic texts and books in history and French. And I think it's important for seniors to socialize, like, you know, meet people like we are doing, and to keep their brains fit. Mm-hmm. So that's from me. Thank you.
Yeah. Yes, and each time as we get ideas from things people want, we're working on scheduling things ahead. So we definitely, Dr. Ramona's connected with someone where we will have a discussion about brain health in one of our future podcasts. Okay, now that brings me to the honor of introducing Marion Pollock is the chair of the 411 Senior Center Society. She has been an activist involved in housing issues, health, working with alliances with other senior centers to get such things as the reduced cost phone, get things like the free income tax service for senior citizens. And so she has also been part of a senior issues group that last year we had a panel discussion where people from across the country talked about things that were issues in their groups. So we are happy that she's going to be bringing forward a pertinent issue and helping to facilitate our discussion. And then we have Susan Gage. Susan and I are both I'm going to be 75 on Saturday. She is 75 and she is ferociously working for environmental issues. She is one of the elders around the Sacred Trees Project, and she is going to give us some information about that. And so we'll just start with Marion and then you'll get further indications from both of them of things that they're working on now. We're also looking at what can we do beyond the election? How do we hold people accountable? How do we contact and stay, use the energies of each of you who have issues? How do we go beyond being interested in something to making something into a bill, a law, or a practice that happens and helps life better for older people? So, Marianne?
Well, thank you very much. And early happy birthday, Charlotte. You know, you deserve to have a wonderful birthday. So I actually, as Charlotte said, I'm the board chair of the 411 Senior Center. And so I just want to pick up on what some people said. Dr. Ramona talked about how important it is for seniors to be connected and things like that. And I agree. But some of the community organizations that help seniors stay connected are senior centers and nonprofit community-based senior serving organizations. And what we need for these organizations is funding at all levels. So we don't have to keep applying for grants. We don't keep on having to apply for funds. So we can address seniors, you know, we can provide an environment for seniors to socialize, to learn, to have fun, and things like that. So I think in this election, one of the issues has to be core funding for nonprofit community-based seniors organizations, because it's one of the few ways in which seniors can become connected. Also in this election, housing is an issue. But unlike for younger people, where, you know, the cost of buying a house is a real issue, for most seniors, it's not a question of buying a house. Most of us in our seniorhood are not going to be buying houses. But what we need is nonprofit affordable housing. You know, the Tories, when they were in power, they essentially destroyed the co-op housing, co-op housing program. And the Liberals, despite what they're saying, haven't done a lot to reinstate it. We need more nonprofit, accessible, affordable housing for seniors. The 2020 report by the Seniors Advocate said the average wait for a senior in BC to get into senior subsidized housing is over 2.5 years. That is shocking, and it's unacceptable. You know, what it means is 2.5 years of seniors living in, you know, terrible housing, unsafe housing, and things like that. So it's really clear that one of the issues in this election is affordable housing for seniors. We're not going to be buying homes, but we need more affordable housing. And we need new money to be announced. We don't need money to keep on being recycled and, you know, announced and announced and announced again. Someone talked about long-term care. And at the beginning of the pandemic, we saw the devastation that COVID-19 was having in long-term care homes. I mean, it was absolutely shocking and absolutely horrific. In fact, in some places in Montreal and Ontario, they had to call in the armed forces because it was so bad. So what we need is an infusion of funding for long-term care. We need national standards, national enforceable standards about, you know, staff ratio, staff to patient ratios, and things like that. You know, and they have to, you know, and your funding has to be tied to that. We also need to take the profit out of long-term care. I don't think that, you know, companies should make money off frail seniors' needs. We know that according to the 2020 report of the Seniors Advocate, you know, the for-profit homes spend less money on food for seniors, you know, in long-term care, less money for, you know, for for a patient, you know, per patient and things like that. So one of the things in this election we need to do is we really do need to talk about, you know, standards for affordable care. And I would also say that one of the things that's becoming clearer and clearer to me is that, you know, some seniors want and mostly need to go into long-term care. But we also need more community-based services so seniors who want to stay in their homes can afford to stay in their homes. And that has to be an issue in this election. In terms of dentistry, at the four, you know, when I do information and referral at the 411 Senior Center, we get seniors all the time who need dental work, who are in pain and can't afford it. We can refer them to a number of places that have reduced dental costs, and the 411 information referral program has a list of those people. But it's still, for a lot of people, it's still 40% off. It's still 60% too high. We know that the NDP has been trying to get legislation on, you know, dental plans, you know, dental care for seniors, but the Liberals and Conservatives haven't supported it. And this brings me to pharmacare. So many seniors I know can't afford to take the drugs they're prescribed because they're too expensive. In fact, we have someone who I'm really familiar with on 411 who just talked about how the drugs she's prescribed aren't covered. So she's paying an exorbitant amount every month for drugs. We know that what this results is in many seniors not being able to afford their medication. So what we do need is a national pharmacare program. Several months ago, there was a private member's bill to bring a national pharmacare plan to Canada, and it was introduced into the House of Parliament. It was opposed by the Conservatives and the Liberals. It was supported by the NDP and the Greens. And, you know, it's shocking, you know, and, you know, people keep on talking. The Liberals keep on talking about how we need pharmacare, but it hasn't happened. And even if you have an extended health plan, we still need fair pharmacare, because in places like New Zealand, who have fair pharmacare, and it also involves group buying of drugs, the cost of drugs in and of itself is cheaper. So that, you know, so when you go to the polls, think about which party can also bring fair pharmacare to seniors across Canada. The last thing I'll talk about is poverty. Thankfully, the guaranteed income supplement has, you know, kept many seniors out of deep poverty. We know that. But, you know, for seniors living on $17,000 or $18,000 a year is still not a very good, you know, it's still a very difficult life. And so what we need is a government who will increase, will increase the guaranteed income supplement, and that will go to the lowest income Canadians. So the election is on Monday, September 20th, and I urge people to vote. This is going to be a really tight election. Every single vote counts, and we all need to vote. You can vote early. The advanced polls, I think, are starting tomorrow. You can vote at your district returning office, and you can vote in a whole bunch of ways. I also want to say, and I think Susan will talk more about it, is that we want two things to be able to pass on to the younger generation. One is we want childcare. I know so many seniors who are spending their whole lives looking after their grandkids. It's not that they don't love their grandkids, because they totally do, but they didn't retire to spend full time being child caregivers. So we need to have a national child care plan that, you know, that's not, you know, money that helps run centers and fund centers and things like that. We also need to have a, you know, I want to pass on to the younger generation a better environment. So I think I could go on and on and on, but I think I'll end there. Just to say, and the 411 Senior Center has a very active, one of our board committees, and it's a totally open committee, is a Seniors Issues Committee. And if you're interested in becoming involved in helping keep politicians to account, this is the committee for you. You know, you just sort of come to our meetings. We've been meeting on Zoom lately. Bring your ideas, bring your comments, bring your generosity. So that's what I have to say right now. But please vote.
I have to unmute myself. I think what we're going to do is allow just about 5 minutes of questions for Marion, and then we're going to go on to hear Susan's points, and then we'll have a bit of time for questions for hers and comments. So does anyone have a comment or a question for Marion?
Well, I'll ask a question. I don't know that there really is an answer, but I think one of the things that we're all concerned about is, even if you vote for somebody who promises something, how do you ensure that they keep their promises? And this has just happened so many times. It's happened in the environment in BC that we thought, we didn't think we'd be out fighting this war in the woods, because we thought that old growth logging was going to end when the NDP got in. And, you know, I guess it's easier for opposition parties to, if they don't think they're going to form the government. But even when, you know, I mean, Trudeau has broken a few promises too, so that even if you get, there's something very disillusioning right now about politics, which is the feeling that there's kind of a lack of ethics and people don't always keep their word. Just wondering what you have to say about that, Marion.
I wish I knew, you know, the complete answer, but I think, and part of it is to understand that politics doesn't end in Canada on September 20th, that we need to stay involved. We need to keep putting pressure on politicians, whether that be through going to rallies and demonstrations, writing letters, lobbying them, whatever. I think that's, you know, I think that's really key to it. I think that if we, after September 20th, we just say, whoever's in is in, and we don't follow up, I think that's a mistake. And that's why, for those people in the Greater Vancouver area, the 411 Seniors Issues Committee is really an important vehicle, because we've been, we're currently in the process of meeting with two provincial politicians. We've met with Vancouver City politicians, and we work with federal politicians. So I think really that's part of it. I also want to say that we need to protect things like the Canada Pension Plan and old age security. People remember a couple years ago when Mr. Harper said he was going to change OAS eligibility, old age security eligibility, from 65 to 67. Guess who was in his cabinet and who didn't come out publicly opposing that? Mr. Aaron O'Toole. You know, we need to protect, you know, we need to ensure that seniors, especially poor seniors, are protected, because if we can't protect the most vulnerable seniors, then we can't protect any of us.
Dr. Ramona, you recently joined 411. What do you think about something like being involved with the Senior Issues Group?
I was thinking it sounds really interesting, and I want to thank Marion for coming out with all that information. Being a newcomer, I didn't know about, like, for example, the dental services, the costs were prohibitive. I'm thankful to have very good children who funded that treatment for me, but I can't imagine seniors on a, you know, not having a lot of income being able to afford that. And I'm sure there are other issues which would come up, and I would definitely like to be involved in this kind of a committee since I have a lot of time on my hands.
That's wonderful. We're meeting on September 23rd at 2 p.m. Send your information to Charlotte, who can then send it on to me, right? And I'll get you hooked up with our committee. That makes my day.
Thank you.
And then the other people who are listening, sometimes a lot more people than are on physically on the podcast listen to the podcast. So know that the 411 Senior Center is open. Policies are being worked out for how many people can be in scheduling. But the information and referral is continually open. People can come in one at a time and they can get help with someone that refers them to different services, helps them get signed up for GIS or old age or just about any issues. So if you haven't been into the 411 lately, you can come to it. It's at 333 Terminal Avenue, near the SkyTrain station in Vancouver, or you can, I don't know the phone number by heart. Do you know the phone number, Marion?
I have to look it up every time. And I would just say, just add to what Charlotte said, you have to be masked to come in because we want to protect everybody at 411, seniors and the staff. And starting September 15th, we're asking that you be double vaccinated to protect everybody. And I'll give you the phone number in a second.
Okay, and that was a policy at the request of members when they first said that people could go back into the senior centers. We received a lot of calls and messages from centers saying that they would like to ensure that people that they would be dealing with or working with when they come to the 411 center are both double vaccinated and are going to be wearing a mask.
And our phone number is 604-684-8171.
Say it one more time.
604-684-8171.
Okay, and so now I would like to introduce you to Susan Gage. She is retired, but she's been involved for most of her life in peace, social justice, and environmental issues. She's one of the founders of the Global Village Store. She's involved in a community development project in Guatemala, and she's been an environmentalist ever since she was involved in the struggle to save the Clayquot Sound. Currently, she's one of the leaders in the Elders for Ancient Trees, a group of almost 400 seniors trying to save the last old-growth forest of BC, and especially in Fairy Creek. Doesn't sound like she's retired, huh? Okay, take it away, Susan.
Hi. Well, this is great to be able to talk to you a little bit about the Elders for Ancient Trees. I think the reason... You know, people say, well, why elders? Like, what's special about elders involved with old growth? But a lot of us have grandchildren, and we're really concerned about the environment in general and what kind of a world they will face. Also realizing that, you know, us boomers, and I'm kind of on the vanguard of the boomers because I was born in 46, we actually are responsible for a lot of the Earth's destruction that has taken place. It's happened on our watch since the end of the Second World War. And we've actually, most of us enjoyed a fairly comfortable lifestyle, you know, using up more than our ecological footprint on this Earth. And so feeling kind of responsible for it. So how we all got started was back in last April or May, a number of us, just a few of us, 8 or 10 of us seniors decided that we should go out and get arrested. I was partly getting arrested because my 15-year-old granddaughter said that she was going to go out and get arrested. And I felt so badly for her. I mean, this could be on her record. And so essentially I decided I would kind of offer myself up in her stead, and that if anyone's going to get arrested, it should be me because I don't have to apply for a job or anything else. So there were a number of us that felt the same way. And we started kind of zooming on this and trying it, but it wasn't that easy to get arrested in Fairy Creek. And talk about sound, it was quite easy. You just go there and stay overnight and get up the next morning and stand on the bridge. And in Fairy Creek, you'd go up and stay overnight. It's very cold there overnight too. And you didn't know whether you'd be arrested or not. It was a very different situation. There were different camps in different places, and the RCMP would sometimes be there and they sometimes wouldn't. So then we decided that maybe we would go out on a day trip and try to get more elders. And we started putting out the word. And I don't know how many of you know Jackie Larkin, who's supposed to be here instead of me, but she's quite a live wire. And, you know, between us, we ended up getting a huge group of almost 100 elders actually went out in convoy. And, you know, we had a little, we had some media coverage. We had a ceremony out there and we almost got arrested. We managed to get up to where three protesters were locked down, but when the RCMP, there were only about six of them, saw all these elders stalking up the hill, they actually got into their trucks and took off, which is very empowering. And we got a very good article in the Black Press that went to all sorts of community newspapers in BC and everything about these elders driving off the RCMP. So this was just the beginning of it, and we just kept going. And now we have almost 400 of us on our list that we send out a weekly update to. And we've done various things. We've had bus trips out to Fairy Creek, as well as convoys. And we decided to, one thing that happened that I was involved in was in mid-June, we were going out in smaller convoys because it's actually very, having almost 100 people was too many. You know, it was just in that there was hardly any place to park, and it was just really difficult. And there's no telephone communication. There's no cellular coverage there, so we couldn't communicate with each other, and it was difficult. So we decided to go out in smaller groups. And the bus that I was on was terribly pouring with rain, and we got to a line of what's called an exclusion zone. And this is key to this whole struggle because the RCMP have been setting up what they call exclusion zones or arrest lines. And they say you can't cross into this line or, you know, you'll be arrested. And our bus got up there. We weren't intending to get arrested this time. Partly we needed to use the bus to get home too. And the RCMP not only stopped us from going across, but wouldn't let us get to a point where we could turn the bus, this was a big tourist bus for, you know, 50 people, 50 seats, could turn around. So we ended up having to back up in the pouring rain for about 40 minutes on this very windy little logging road with places you could have dropped over the edge. And it was very scary. So this started, I lodged a complaint with the RCMP and some of us started talking. And in the end, we decided to challenge these exclusion zones, that we were just peaceful protesters. We made it clear that we were peaceful protesters. We should have been allowed part of it, like Avatar Grove was in there. It was a public kind of place people could go to. The principle is that we should be allowed to protest. It's part of our democratic right, and we should be allowed access on the roads. And the injunction that had been granted to Teal Jones actually said that peaceful protesters were to be allowed. So we decided we'd go to court, which we did. And the judge, Thompson, agreed with us. He said he didn't need to add anything to the injunction because it was really already clear in the injunction that these large exclusion zones were not legal. However, the RCMP has continued to create exclusion zones. The Media Association, the Canadian Association of Journalists, also had a similar complaint at the same time. And several media people have been arrested or after this judgment. So that's one ongoing thing. The other thing is that the police arrests have become increasingly kind of brutal. I don't know if you've seen the footage of the 60 peaceful protesters that were all pepper sprayed and some of them beat up. And it's kind of, you watch this and you think, my God, could this be Canada? This isn't the country I know. So we're going to court again. Next week, there are several cases being heard between the Rainforest Flying Squad, which is the group of protesters out there, and the elders. We have three different cases. One is essentially saying the RCMP is in contempt of court because of the continued exclusion zones. One is opposing the injunction because Teal Jones, their injunction expires and they have to ask for a new one. And the third one is the elders case, which is saying when you grant an injunction, this is, you know, saying that that protesters are not allowed to impede the logging trucks. You have to consider not just the bottom line, the profits to the company, which has always been the only criteria for deciding this. You have to think about the public interest and things like climate change and et cetera, and the right of peaceful protest. And so this will be a major, the chances of us winning is kind of a long shot, but if we win, it's going to be major because it will change forestry in BC. So right now, all of this might be a little bit theoretical when it comes to Fairy Creek, because right now the forests have again opened after the fire closure during part of the summer, and Teal Jones seems determined to log everything they can before the court cases and before their injunction expires. And also there's a technical panel that is supposed to be recommending deferral zones, and their recommendations are also coming out next week. So right now, 23 people have been arrested already today, and they've brought in heavy equipment and people's cars have been crushed and et cetera. But one thing about it has been very empowering is that elders do have, we have a certain privilege and status. We found that when elders go out there, they don't get pushed around the same way these young protesters do. The police are much more respectful of us. And in fact, a lot of the times when they arrest seniors, they actually just let them go. They don't even take their names. They just want to get them out of there. And the other thing is that we do have time, more time than other people are working full time, to phone and to write letters and to really put pressure on government. And we have been told kind of a little bit behind the scenes, this is just kind of word of mouth, that this whole technical panel was partly authorized and Mr. Horgan decided to appoint this technical panel, who are all pretty environmental sound people, because of all the phone calls. And I mean, we had elders that were phoning their MLA and John Horgan's office daily, and that they just felt they had to do something. So it's kind of whatever happens, it's certainly been a lesson to me that elders do have, we have privilege, and because of that, we have kind of a responsibility to just do what we can. And we're not finished yet.
I like that point that you said, we have time on our hands. One of the other things we have, particularly within this group, we've got creative writers, people that have been parts of creative writing groups. We have three or four people, not all of them are on today, but we've had three of the people that are on have had books published. And maybe we could do something on the shift from creative writing, or using creative writing to do advocacy writing, and maybe crafting or looking at some of the effective letters. Do you think that's something that would be, does anyone think that's something that would be of benefit to them?
You know, news releases and are really, that's a really good skill I've found to be able to do, is to whip up a news release and get it out and things like that. I think would be useful for all sorts of causes that seniors are involved in.
I think that what you're doing, Susan, is very, very wonderful. It's wonderful. And I'm worried about the environment to and for my little grandson, who's only 4 years old, and in another 10, 20 years, what will happen? You know, the way the trees are being, you know, cut to the ground just to bring up another condominium or another mall that we don't really need, seriously. And, you know, I mean, in the next 10, 20, 30 years, what's going to happen, you know? So I'm glad. Thank you for doing that, whatever you are. I hope it's making a big difference. And I agree, maybe we could put a poem in an article or, you know, like, you know, something to show that, you know, the trees are very important. Like, I see trees disappearing overnight, you know?
Yeah.
And we don't realize that the birds are dependent on the trees. The animals are dependent on the trees. Like, they are so important to us. They give us the oxygen. They give us life. And yet, I don't understand. Why is it not that important for the government? Why do they allow the contractors to go out and just destroy a whole batch of land, clear all the trees? Like, who gives them the permission to do that, you know? And these trees belong to our future generation, right? We don't have any right. Even if I had a tree in my backyard, I don't have a right to cut a tree because it doesn't really belong to me. It belongs to Mother Nature, right? And the whole idea of this thing's happening and yet people are not waking up, you know. That's just so sad. I feel really sad when I hear about things. So I'm really happy that you're doing it. Maybe we could put poetry inside there, or maybe put articles about how we feel about losing a tree, you know, and things like that. That might help, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we need to be as creative as possible, for sure.
Thank you. We need to make more people aware of how important it is, a tree. And then to grow a tree takes about 50, 60 years. Well, and so don't just go out and cut a little small tree. Oh dear, you know, I don't even want to start on that.
And some of these trees are over 1,000 years old that we're talking about. So they are.
They're
ancients. That's another tie that we have as seniors, is that we're supporting these ancients, supporting ancients, right?
Yes.
And how is that environmentally connected? The old growth trees, the significance of the old growth trees?
Well, you know, it's not just trees, it's the whole forest. And we're finding out more and more about these ecosystems. I don't know if you've heard of an author called Suzanne Simard, who has written a book called Finding the Mother Tree. And she's written about how she's done all sorts of research, which was ignored for decades by the Ministry of Forests, and still is, how the trees actually kind of communicate, and they, through the fungal rhizomes under the earth, they actually communicate with each other. They send warnings, and they help their young survive and their neighbors survive. And, you know, it's just very interesting. We're just finding out about it. It's not just the trees, it's the whole ecosystem that they support, the birds and the animals and the fungi. And, you know, there's medicines and insects and all sorts of things in there that we haven't even cataloged.
I think that we actually are making a difference in terms of the environment, although it's not the difference that we all need. If you look at poll after poll after poll, they say climate change is one of the main issues in this election. 10 years ago, that would not have been true. And that is because of activists like Susan and Jackie and amazing young people who are doing the work. So I think that for me, the fact that it is one of the main issues in this election gives me immense hope, because it says that our actions are having some impact.
Mm-hmm. To that point, when you mentioned what can we do? That was one of our questions, was, you know, what can we do to make sure beyond the election these points continue to be worked on? What are some ways that, in either of your experience, that you go beyond just going to, why just going to the polls isn't enough?
Are you talking to me?
Yes.
Well, I mean, I think that two things are really important. One is to just keep in with the media, and we're kind of learning on the as we go about, you know, developing a better media list and how to really contact the media and not just send in a news release, but phone them. And, you know, because media are important. And the other thing is just that contact, just phoning, demanding meetings with your MLAs, just keeping in touch with your MLAs and MPs and letting them know that you're going to keep at them and at them until something is done. You know, and even if they don't speak out, this huge, our whole country is locked into this system of party discipline, you know. Like, I know that there are people in the government, for instance, who are really opposed to the old growth logging. And they have told me so, but they won't speak out because party discipline, party cohesion is so important. But still, there's things going on behind that you don't always see. And if you keep at these MLAs, and if they think that, you know, that you're a sign of other voter opinion, you will create change. Might be slow, but you'll make things happen.
I think we can, you know, it's free to send letters to your member, your federal member of parliament, and handwritten letters, they really take. So, you know, I think we can do that. I think that, you know, doing things individually is great. I think that what Susan talked about, doing things collectively, is great. And now, you know, and so I think that, you know, there are so many things we can do. What do the Fairy Creek people need now, Susan?
Well, they need bodies out there. And some of us are trying to get out there, as well as supplies, because a lot of their supplies have been now damaged or confiscated. So there are, you know, groups of elders going out in the next 2 days, taking supplies, either by car or a Saturday bus. But, I mean, the other thing is just to, you know, keep on with your with your MLAs and MPs. There's a federal NDP person running, and I think it's Vancouver Granville, Anjali Paterai, I think is her name, that she's NDP, but she's really outspoken against old growth logging. And so she's doing what most of the members won't do. She's kind of not exactly bad mouthing John Horgan's policy, but very close to it. You know, encouraging people like that, I think, is another thing that would be really good. Letters to the editor, if you can get them in, and social media.
You know, I have a suggestion, and that is that a letter created that gives the scientific reasons why the old growth forest is valuable to the environment and to us as a species. But the letter needs to be signed by every senior of the hundreds or 200s or what, 500, whatever. You know, you could put one at 411 and put another one at other places and have. So get together 1,000 signatures that says, hey guys, wake up. There's a good reason why we need this, and you're destroying it, and it, you can't recover it in 100 years. Sorry about the noise of the train. Anyway, that would be, yeah. You know, I'm a writer that I'm thinking, you know, maybe there's some writing I could contribute to you. But I think it's, you know, you get 1,000 voters to sign a document that says, hey guys, wake up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm sure that information is out there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it is. Yeah. And that's government's seeing that information, but yeah, getting massive dignitaries is a good idea. Thank you.
Neil is one of our people that almost every week he writes a poem. So I'll connect his email to both you and Marion around this idea of having a letter that could be put at different places where people can sign it. I think that's a great idea. Cancer Society used some things like that, where they had a sample letter and they sent it and people could sign it in a number of places wherever they were, but it just increased the magnitude. I like your idea too. I know that marketing companies have said that when they get a handwritten letter from someone, that they count that as being like representing 1,000 people. So our penmanship, since we are of the people who can write cursive, that should get some people's attention. speaking of stories, Neil has written something. We've been experimenting with different forms. We have individuals who have written stories, one person wrote a letter to a doctor and interviewed a doctor about their practice. Well, Neil has written a story, and he's got two other people with our group are going to read the voices. So maybe you could introduce that, Neil. But first, let us thank you both for giving that presentation and ideas of what we can do. We are planning things that are going to be happening as we go into October. And definitely we could put one of our activity days, having some sample effective letters to editors or some sample letters that we've used, and then have people write them in different styles so that everybody can feel like, oh, I don't have to find somebody to write a letter. Everybody can have that kind of experience in writing an effective policy letter or letter to an editor or letter to an MP, LA. Okay, Neil.
Here we are, unmute. This story is in response to a contest, and I've been fortunate to have been sort of awarded the Me Too Prize, how it works is that on Saturday morning at noon hour on Saturday, I get an outline and the number of words, and the outline is that the story has to contain the outline, not the words of the outline, but the ideas of the outline. And so I get it on Saturday morning. The outline for a story with no title. The title is mine, but it has perhaps the first or second sentence were given by the Charlotte. What's the name of the writing weekly contest? I think. Anyway,
Writers Weekly.
Writers Weekly. Mm-hmm. Well, Leslie Hebert and I have had the pleasure of working poetry and prose when we wove it together, and we did a presentation when we used to do our poetry in New West. And so this story I wrote, and the maximum was 700 words. So it's really just a page and a half. So it's called The Alien, and I will start. She squinted at the dark yellow leaves blowing in through the broken window, scattering into the corners of the room. She never had any friends, and she had her translucent white skin and pink eyes to thank for that. As an alien, she had never attended regular school, which didn't help her social status either. Yet, on this freezing cold night, she found herself huddled on the floor of an abandoned hunting shack, surrounded by the girls she had met on one of the hiking trails in the nearby woods. Elia startled when the red-headed one of them plopped down beside her, and leaning forward, she spat out the words,
"Truth or dare?"
Elia could never get used to the aggressive nature of these earth people. She asked,
"What is truth or dare, please?"
"Stupid alien. Don't they teach you anything in alien school?"
"I learned lots. What is truth or dare, please?"
"It's a game where..." "Oh, forget it. But we've got to do something to warm up or we'll freeze to death."
"No, please. If this is common knowledge I should be learned of, tell me, please."
"It's a game where you must choose to either tell the truth or do something weird that you really don't want to do."
"I am always tell truth. Why would I not, please?"
The red-headed girl, frustrated at the innocence of the alien, either faked or real.
"Damn you, girl, or whatever you are. I want to know, are you a girl? Do you have all the right parts? Are you made the same as us girls?"
She gestured to the others.
"I do not know. When I arrived, your medical staff declared me a girl and entered that information on my papers. But never having been introduced to you, why the doctors made that determination, it is information I do not have as yet, please."
Elia's red-headed protagonist stood up.
"Well, perhaps it's time we told you how and why they made that determination."
Just then, a small device in Elia's pocket made a sound. She took out a small square box and placed it to the side of her head.
"Yes, please. There are three. Yes, I think good specimens. All teenage females. Yes, please. Now would be a good time. Thank you, please. Well, friends, you have been invited to meet my commander on board our mothership. I hope it will be an eventful experience for all of you."
Elia turned to the red-headed girl.
"I think I am going to particularly enjoy dissecting you, please. Especially you, please. Four to transport, please."
Dark yellow leaves continued blowing in through the broken window and scattering to the corners of the empty, abandoned hunting shack. Thank you. Thank you, girls. Thank you, ladies.
Okay. This broadcast is part of a summer smorgasbord of unique programming brought to you through a collaboration between the Powered by H podcast and Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon, both hosted and produced by your own sister C, me, Charlotte Farrell, here at CJSF 90.1 Burnaby, CJSF.ca, streaming worldwide. And if any of you are interested in being interviewed in any of these special shows, or if any of you would like to join the training that we have going on, helping seniors to learn how and increase their confidence in producing segments of the shows, you can contact me, email me at pbaafc@gmail.com, pbaafc@gmail.com. So now, you know what I always say when people ask me what time it is? It is love time, poem time.
Love time, poem time, love time.